o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show on this Friday afternoon here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Thank you as always for hanging out with us on your way home going into the weekend. Busy weekend of football coming up, right, with ASU Oregon tomorrow and, of course, the Cardinals on Sunday against the Raiders.
We're running out of college football games.
Oh, very quickly.
We're going to get our Saturdays back in a couple of weeks here.
Yeah, very quickly.
We're going to get our Saturdays back.
Yeah, very quickly. And then, of course, yeah,
running out of weeks.
Diamondback speculation as the hot stove league starts to kind of simmer and then heat over. We're going to
owners meeting. All of that stuff's coming to an end now.
No doubt.
And now things are really going to heat up in December.
Well,
when we start seeing players. Would you have thought that Jeff Mathis was the first move? The first domino. If we had made a bet on who's going to be the first domino, I would not have guessed it would have been Jeff Mathis.
You know what? Probably not, but in retrospect now it kind of makes a lot of sense that some team would, because these GMs are no dummies now, right? These young GMs in baseball, they're no dummies. They see the kind of impact that Jeff Mathis has had on this roster the last couple of years, and that somebody the Texas Rangers probably think they got Jeff Mathis for a bargain. That 2 years and, you know, whatever it was per year, the raise of, you know, over $2 million, what he got this year, they probably thought they got a bargain for Jeff Mathis, given what he's able to do with the pitching staff. I don't care that he's got a career batting average under 200.
Yeah.
That matters.
I know.
But I understand what you're saying. No, it does not seem like Jeff Mathis would have been the first domino to fall.
I was talking to a player. He says, hey, I'm not sure what he got, but I believe it's more than what he was making here in Arizona. So this is what a player telling me right now. They believe he got more. And there is no numbers out on Jeff Mathis' contract.
Right.
But I'm thinking, you know, somewhere in that $6, $7, $8 million range on a two-year deal. Probably more closer to $6 to $7 million, but more than what he got paid in Arizona.
He was making $2 million a year here. The big domino in terms of stardom is Paul Goldschmidt. The big domino in terms of money is Zach Greinke. And maybe the two are linked, as it has been suggested by some, that the Diamondbacks might try to package them together to find somebody to take Zach Greinke's contract off their hands, and maybe Paul Goldschmidt sweetens that pot so the Diamondbacks don't have to eat as much as they think. There was a terrific story on the Athletics website today from Zach Buchanan, and it's a lengthy story, but it kind of covers the Paul Goldschmidt situation from literally all angles and says, look, there's two choices here for the Diamondbacks. They can either do what the Pittsburgh Pirates did and realize that they were not going to be contending and trade their franchise face, Andrew McCutchen, even though his contract wasn't up yet. Or they can do what the Kansas City Royals did and hold on to their franchise faces for as long as humanly possible, get very little to nothing for them when they leave, but do that because it's just too difficult to part ways with them. And those are kind of the two choices in front of the Diamondbacks right now.
The
Pirates' way or the Royals' way.
Yeah, and I was pretty fascinated by this, too, because it's an example of one team that cut bait and got out from under and another team that didn't. And that's, let's start with the Pirates. The Pirates had a decision to make. They had one year coming up, a team option worth $14.5 million for Andrew McCutchen. Does that sound familiar? A team option for $14.5 million? Yeah, it's the exact amount of money that Paul Goldschmidt is getting paid. So they decided at the time, the Pirates were coming off consecutive losing seasons. They had averaged 93 wins for 3 years, but they had 2 years where they were starting to struggle a little bit. And they had to decide whether it was worth keeping McCutchen to try to tread water in a division with strong teams, or whether they try to get something for him in the two, you know, four. And they decided to get something for him. They traded him in January to the Giants for a couple of prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So they got out from under. They didn't have to pay him the money. And they got a couple of prospects back from McCutchen. That's the way they went. The Royals, on the other hand, in 2015, they had all these homegrown players. They made it to the World Series. They won it. Remember, they beat the Mets. And, you know, they had a tough decisions coming up with Hosmer and Kane and Moustakas. They were all approaching free agency at the end of the 2017 season. And they decided to try to keep the roster together, try to keep it competitive. And then, you know, they had a season when they went 82-80, two straight years they didn't make the postseason. And instead of trading any of those guys, they ended up doing nothing. And so they went 58-104 this past season. And if they would have traded, Hosmer, maybe we would have got some good prospects for him. Instead, San Diego signed him as a free agent, gave him a big deal. They probably got the compensatory pick, but they didn't turn him into a couple of good prospects.
I've been saying this the biggest mistake that you could make with Paul Goldschmidt is to keep him and get nothing but that compensatory pick for him. That to me is a disaster.
I agree with you.
You can't do that.
I agree with you. After talking with some teams over the last couple of days, that would be absolutely the worst scenario if you hold on to him and then you can't re-sign him. I had one team I spoke with this week said, if you're going to hold on to him, you better sign him. Like, if you're not going to trade him,
oh, yeah.
and they said to me, look, to be completely honest, you could get more for him now than you can at the deadline. So if you're going to trade him,
sure,
you got to do it now.
There's more suitors. There's more teams that you can get involved. I mean, look, when you frame it up in the conversation of the Zach Buchanan story, you can either do what the Pirates did or you can do what the Royals did. I mean, let's call this like it is. There's nothing here to think about. In my opinion, there's no decision to be made. There's no analysis that needs to be done. There's no, you know, big, huge decision that you've got to internally debate. It's as clear as day.
You have to trade him.
You
have to get something for him.
It sucks. Just like it sucked for the Pirates to have to trade Andrew McCutchen. I mean, he was their face. He was their MVP. He was their guy. He was beloved. Everybody had an Andrew McCutchen jersey in Pittsburgh. It sucks, but to me, there's nothing to think about here.
It's almost, and again, I don't think you make decisions based on the fans, but Corbin, AJ, Goldie, Greinke, all gone in the same year?
Mm-hmm.
A punch in the gut, no?
Oh, it's a total punch in the gut.
Punch in the gut.
But
the bully just punched you in the gut.
Okay, but two of
on
those...
the school playground.
Two of those punches I cannot control. Okay? I can't control Patrick Corbin. He's going to leave. I can't control AJ. He's going to leave. And if I, as an organization, have already made the determination that money-wise, I can't afford to go out to the market and pay similar type players to come in here and replace those guys, and that determination has already been made, right? Payroll's going down.
Yep.
Okay.
We've talked about that before, yep.
Then again, we're back to square one. We're back to pass, go, collect $200. There's nothing to think about. Because two of those punches to my gut, I can't bring back. So then why would I bring back Goldschmidt knowing that a year from now I'm not going to be able to afford to bring him back either? Why would I not look to move Zach Greinke knowing that as a team whose payroll is going down, I'm going to pay somebody $35 million a year when I'm losing my center fielder, my number two pitcher? I mean, there's, at some point, logic and rational thinking, and the Diamondbacks, and Hazen in particular, are a very logical and rational organization. I don't think there's any decision to make. The question now is, A, your willingness to do it, and B, making sure you play this right so you maximize the return on Goldie. Play the market right. Play your contacts right. Play the game the right way, the negotiating game, right, with teams to make sure you play all the offers against themselves and you get the best offer you can. Gamble, I just don't think there's a decision to make here. I think it's made.
I think it is, too. And I think that the ownership is really behind the management of Mike Hazen and believing in this staff and what their determinations will be.
You said that earlier. You don't think there's going to be any hesitation on ownership's part to do what Hazen recommends should be done.
Yeah, no, none at all. I think this organization is going to follow whatever the direction. They really believe in this front office, more so than they believed in any front office they've had in a long time. So they really do believe in this front office. It'll be interesting, and I do think that if the determination is made that, and I think Mike Hazen cutthroat. I don't think Mike Hazen's a cutthroat guy. I don't think Mike Hazen's a sentimental guy. I think they've had plenty of guys that have worked here that have made decisions based on sentiment. Mike Hazen is cutthroat. This is what's best for the organization. We're going to do it. Take sentiment out of it. I don't care how much you're liked, how many people's jerseys you're. This is what's best for the team. Mike Hazen's trying to build this roster back up so they can compete quickly.
Come watch ASU versus Oregon with Arizona Sports tomorrow. We're going to all be hanging out at the Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers on Higley and Queen Creek in Gilbert, giving away ASU gear, tickets to the Territorial Cup in Tucson, other great prizes as well, all from Coors Light. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. It happened out of necessity, but the Phoenix Suns might have stumbled into their future Big Three. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You must learn.
It's the Knowledge Drop.
Let knowledge drop.
The Knowledge Drop. Brought to you by Lifetime Windows. Did you know metal window frames conduct heat right into your home? Visit LifetimeWindowsAZ.com.
The Knowledge Drop we're dropping today comes from the Twitter account of Evan Sidery, who works over at Bright Side of the Sun.
Yeah, does a good job, Evan.
Very nice job. We got a lot of good young people covering the Suns, you know, who kind of look at it with an eye towards basketball, but a little analytics, too. They're good numbers crunchers, but they know the game. They study the game very well. Kellen Olson at ArizonaSports.com is one such individual. Evan is another. And he tweeted out today, God, I love this, the NBA's three most potent three-man lineups so far this year. Booker, Ayton, and Mikal Bridges were third on the list. Third. In terms of, well, they were a plus 36.5 when they're on the floor together. Now, there's, which, you know, okay, there's a qualification here, a minimum of 55 minutes.
Okay, but let's talk about the other qualification. This team has been blown out of a lot of basketball games.
Yes.
How the hell are those three guys a plus 35?
Well,
when they're on the court together, think about it. They've lost eight games by 17 points or more. They've only won like three games all year.
Mm-hmm.
Yet those three guys are a plus 35 when they're on the court together.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an oddity for a team that's lost the way the Suns have lost.
It is, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it is absolutely an oddity to think they've been blown out as much as they have, and to think that those three could make that much of it, because you're like, well, when? When were they 36.5 points better than the opposition? And I think a lot of that, frankly, speaks to how infrequently Mikal Bridges has been on the floor, right? So
basically, you're only judging it based on the time Mikal Bridges has been on the floor.
Right.
That's how you judge it.
That's how you judge it.
When Mikal Bridges is on the floor, because usually that's it, because the other guys are on the floor a lot when he's not. You're only basing it based on the minutes that he's played.
When those three guys are on the floor. So it's not like, yeah, they've been blown out a lot. Well, you know what? Mikal Bridges, let's be honest, hasn't played as much as he should be playing. Right? And that's that. Revealed. Now, maybe over time, he'll be exposed for the rookie that he is. Maybe he's part of the reason why he's playing so well right now is that the league doesn't really know him or understand him or know how to guard him or know what he's about or things like that. They'll adjust. But for now, man, if there is not an example for why Mikal Bridges needs more minutes, I don't know what else we could come up with. He demands more minutes. You got to play him. Play him a bunch.
Listen, Trevor Ariza could show up right now, and Igor Kokoshkov is like, yeah, Mikal Bridges is playing, you get the day off. So whenever Ariza comes back, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Igor does. Listen, it doesn't matter, and here's the thing I will say. It doesn't matter who starts the game. It matters who finishes the game. So if he goes back to starting Trevor Ariza, that's fine. You don't need to start Trevor Ariza. His value is what it is. It's not going to change one bit whether he starts, gets benched, comes off the boat, whatever he does. I mean, he's available to be traded December 15th. That's it. We still got another month with Trevor Ariza. Now, if you want to reward Mikal Bridges, then you reward him. You reward him based on how hard he's playing. Now, this is not a kid that is like a Marquise Chris or a Josh Jackson or any of those guys that got their minutes early and it affected them. Mikal Bridges, he played 4 years of college basketball. He won two championships. He played for a great coach. He graduated the same year in high school as Booker did, and he's a rookie. Like, he's a rookie. He is not like Marquise. He's not like Josh, where if he gets all these minutes, he's going to take it for granted. This kid's going to work hard. And I think that he is so good defensively and doesn't need to shoot the ball 13 times like some of those other guys do, that it makes a big difference in the lineup. Trevor Ariza is going to shoot the ball 10, 12 times a game. Mikal Bridges doesn't need to shoot the ball as much as Trevor does. I think that helps.
I think it helps a lot. I think it helps, too, that, well, like the other night, he had 8 points in that game, but
four for six.
He impacted it immensely.
4 for 6 from
the
field.
They were plus 23 when he was on the floor, but he only scored 8 points.
And he shot 66% from the field. Yeah. 4 for 6.
But he didn't demand a bunch of shots. It's not like, you know, TJ or Devin or like you were talking about those guys that are going to demand shots. You're right. It's not necessarily about starting Mikal. To me, what it is about maximizing the amount of time he's on the floor. Now, to me, the best way to do that is to start him, right? Is to make him, and especially, again, I'm going to go back to this. Nothing against Trevor Ariza. He is not a part of your long-term future. Mikal Bridges is.
So why is he playing?
I don't know why.
Why is he playing? Now, you made the argument with Jamal Crawford earlier, which I could live with. Like, you know, when you've got when you bring in a veteran just to be a role player off the bench, not somebody that's going to start, not somebody that's going to make $30 million like Jared did or make, you know, what, $45, $50 million like Tyson did, but you're bringing a guy in on a minimum contract off the bench that is just happy to be here and wants to help, then that's a different thing. Trevor Ariza is making $15 million and expecting to start. So there is a difference there.
Well, there is, and I think salary has something to do with it, and I think situation has something to do with it. Jamal Crawford is clearly playing right now for his love of the game. Right?
Yes.
He signed with the Phoenix Suns. He was unsigned all offseason. He opted out of a contract with Minnesota. Jamal Crawford is playing right now because he loves the NBA game. I'm not saying Ariza doesn't, but Ariza got $15 million, right?
And that's what he wanted.
And that's what he wanted. I mean, he wanted that respect. He wanted that, I want to be wanted. I want somebody to really just woo me and wow me and bring me on board to play. I would hope that on December 15th, the minute they have the opportunity to even think about trading Trevor Ariza, they really think about trading Trevor Ariza. And I expect they will. We've talked about this enough. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
I hope the deal's already like agreed to. December 15th. I mean, I really do. I hope that a deal is already agreed to that Trevor Ariza is going to be gone on December 15th. Hey, Houston waxed Golden State last night.
They did.
Okay, they got rid of Carmelo. They don't got to worry about him anymore. If that's the team for Trevor Ariza to go back to, then that's fine. I don't know what they could get from him. I'm going to have to call and find out. But get something for him and let him go back to Houston.
And give Mikal Bridges 28 minutes a night. Just give it to him.
Absolutely.
Just give it to him.
There's no reason not to.
No. Igor Kokoschkov today at practice basically ruled Trevor Ariza out for tomorrow's game against Oklahoma City.
I spoke with Trevor yesterday. You know, he's still uncertain right now. He's not with us. And, you know, usually we stay with a group who practice. So I don't want to, even if he's come back tomorrow, which I don't know, like our group's going to be, as you can see it right now. So Trevor will not play tomorrow.
Trevor will not play tomorrow because he's not a practice right now and they need to get used to it. I thought this was good, too. DeAndre Ayton, if I can play against Steven Adams, and again, there's a rematch tomorrow like there was against Aldridge a couple nights ago. If I can play against Steven Adams, I can play against anybody in this league.
I'm learning. You know, once I play against Steven Adams, I think I can play against any center in the league because he's just so, I don't know. He's an Afro type of guy as well. You know, he's a big dude, but he can get real low to the ground, takes up a lot of space, and he's real smart too. So, I mean, it's good to take a lot of stuff away from that dude. And his hands are always active. Always.
Oh, very
and he's just nasty.
Oh, he is nasty.
He is a nasty.
He is.
He's got all the tricks in the trade. I love him as a player. Adams, I love him as a player. I'd love to have him on my team because he's just a tough son of a gun.
Yep.
And he's nasty and he'll do whatever he has to do. I mean, elbows, knees, everything. I mean, he makes life miserable for you. Miserable for you when you have to play against him. So good test for DeAndre Ayton.
It is. Although, you know, I am a little uncomfortable. Not a lot, but a little uncomfortable when Ayton starts putting other dudes on pedestals, you know, kind of like what he did with Anthony Davis.
I don't mind it. Do you really?
I do. I don't want him to be starstruck. I don't want him to go walking around and going, ooh, there goes Anthony Davis.
I don't think he's starstruck. I just think he's being honest. Man, if I could play against that guy, like, this is a good challenge. I'm ready for it.
He was starstruck against Anthony Davis. He was the quotes before and after the game was like, man, there's Anthony Davis.
I'll tell you what, Anthony Davis was really impressed by him after the game was over.
I'm sure he was. I just don't, you know, act like you belong, I guess is sort of the phrase, right? You know, don't be all, oh my God, there goes Anthony Davis. Nah, go out there and kick his butt. Don't worry about the fact that's Anthony Davis. And I think he was a little starstruck there. I don't think he's doing that with Steven Adams, but interesting that that's the standard bearer, right? Man, if I can play against that dude, I can play against anybody in this league. that of all the guys to say,
maybe he needs
Steven
to
Adams
challenge
is the
himself.
One.
Maybe he needs that to get him challenged.
All right, you got about a half hour left. We're here at the Safeway. Hayden and Chaparral in Scottsdale, where we are here with Francis Ford Coppola Winery. They're doing a bottle engraving of their wines. You buy a bottle of their wine. All of their wines are on special right now. You can get it engraved for free. It makes a terrific Thanksgiving, Christmas, holiday gift, whatever the case may be, the kind of thing you can wrap up, put under the tree, and go, I'm good, because I know you're going to like that.
Got a half an hour. Engrave is here. He's going to stay. If you get in here anytime in the next half hour, they will stay, and they will engrave that bottle for you absolutely free. Great gift for Thanksgiving. Great gift for the holidays. We are right off the 101 on Hayden and Chaparral. Just stop by, pick up a bottle of the Coppola wines, and you can have it engraved absolutely free. It's a great gift, and very, very popular item.
It is clear David Johnson has been a different player under Byron Leftwich. The numbers back it up. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Back here with you on the Burns and Gambo Show on this Friday afternoon. Cardinals, Raiders. One interesting note about this game, and I was not aware of this, the Raiders haven't practiced for the last couple of days because of the air quality in Northern California with all the fires there.
You gotta wonder where their minds are. You know, you gotta wonder. I mean, they haven't practiced in 2 days. They're living in a community.
Yep.
I mean, that is their community, devastated by the fires. You know, they got to play a football game. It'll be a little bit of a relief, and they get out of there and they come here. But you do, you know, you do question whether, you know, their minds are going to be completely on the football game instead of the fires.
And as Sarah mentioned a moment ago with the injuries, Buda Baker has been ruled out. That's a very tough loss. The offensive line is in just a real state right now with the injuries up the middle. But now DJ Humphreys, he's going to be a game time decision as well. Corey Cunningham would be the swing tackle, the guy who would play in his place. Kamdichie's going to be a game-time decision. The Raiders, though, are just such a mess. They generate no pass rush. They are horrible at protecting their own quarterback. I mean, this is the kind of game where Chandler Jones has just got to be licking his chops.
Absolutely. They've given up 12 sacks in the last two games. So Carr's, and he's going to get sacked a lot more, you know, going forward. But this is one of those games, you know, when you're an elite pass rusher, one's not enough in a game like this. This is where you get fat. This is where you get greedy. You get greedy. One's not enough. You go for two, two and a half, three. You're looking to get a big game against a team like this. You know, Carr's, the wide receivers aren't there. They're really lacking at the wide receiver spot. No Martavis Bryant in this game. They've traded Amari Cooper. I mean, they are lacking the wide receivers. So Carr's had to hold on to the ball a little bit longer, and he's taking a lot of sacks right now.
Real good story today on ESPN.com about David Johnson and how Byron Leftwich has it's worked.
The two games, it's worked.
He's gone back into the past. He's looked up, you know, the 2016 David Johnson and the version of him that produced that successful season, over 2,000 yards from scrimmage. And it's working, and David Johnson's happy, and Steve Wilks is happy because David Johnson is happy. It's been Byron Leftwich has been real, real good for David Johnson in resurrecting his 2018 season. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and he's just, and you know, we had a little bit of a debate on this earlier because I do think that there is a limit to what Josh Rosen can do in his progress, and everybody says that. And you're in the majority, and you're probably right. I just think a little bit differently. Everybody, the number one priority is the development of Rosen. But I think there's only so much you could do with Rosen on Mike McCoy's playbook, on you know, the fact that this is not Leftwich's playbook. You're just tweaking things and adding things here and there. I think the majority of the growth with Rosen is going to come after the season's over, in OTAs, in training camp, in the preseason, and then next year. So I do think that there is a limit to how much progress you're going to get out of Rosen. So in my belief, I think the number one priority is getting David Johnson back to being a star, getting David Johnson back to being one of the elite running backs in the National Football League, getting him back to being a guy that teams fear. Because if they fear David Johnson, that only makes it easier on Josh Rosen.
Yeah, and I don't, you know what? I still stand by what I think, but I don't even know if you really have to choose one, because I think they both kind of go hand in hand, don't they? I mean, David Johnson getting back to 2016 version of David Johnson is only going to help Josh Rosen be a better quarterback. So, I mean, the two are linked.
Intertwined.
It's not like, yes, ooh, look at
that
you.
A good word right there? Intertwined?
Yeah.
You're proud of me? Intertwined.
I am proud of you for using the word intertwined correctly in a sentence, yes.
You use a lot of big words.
No, you really don't.
I'll take that one.
You really don't.
Christian Kirk, the development of him, the development of Mason Cole. I mean, we can make an argument on all of that stuff, and it's legitimate. But I just do think that, man, I think the priority is David Johnson. Get him back. And I'm not saying that the priority is not Rosen. I'm just saying I think there is a limit to how much you can improve with Rosen in such a limited amount of time.
No, I know.
That's all I'm saying.
But there are things that he's got 6 interceptions in his last 3 games. That needs to get better, right? Now, is there a limit to how much better that can get? Probably, but if Rosen is as smart and as confident as everybody says, and he's as teachable as everybody says, let's see if he can improve on that over the last 7 games of the season. Let's see. I mean, the last 2 games they've played, let's be honest about it. Against San Francisco and last week against Kansas City, 2 games, a grand total of 4 drives that really worked well.
2-2.
Right?
Yeah. 2 against San Fran, 2 against Kansas City.
Well, let's do better than that. You know, is there a ceiling on how much? Yes, I don't expect Josh Rosen to be great every single drive he's out there on the field. But is it fair to expect more than 2 good drives per game out of this offense when Rosen is running it? I think that would be improvement. I think that would be something that would be fair to see. So it all goes hand in hand. I
mean, how about just a good half?
Be fine.
Just a good half.
Be fine with me.
Cardinals had 5 possessions. They scored on 3 of them, and the other 2, they had some long drives. They missed a field goal, and they had punted on one of them. Yeah, just a good half of four. That would be the next step, to play a really good half.
Gambo's SOPA Trivia Cash Contest.
Oh, not for nothing. I love money. Don Money.
Eddie Money.
Norm Cash.
Dave Cash.
Cameron Dollar.
Swin Cash.
Johnny Cash.
Brad Penny.
Buck Showalter.
$2,000.
Oh, man.
Penny Hardaway. Joe Buck. 50 Cents. Elizabeth Banks.
Anybody named Dime?
James Bond.
Elizabeth Banks.
Vincent Price.
That's good. Oh, Vincent Price.
CeeLo Green.
Where'd you get this from?
A guy tweeted me
earlier. Oh, man. Oh, that's good.
A guy tweeted me earlier.
Vincent Price.
Chris
Didn't he do
Sello.
The Michael Jackson song? Didn't Vincent Price do the Michael Jackson Thriller?
Yeah, he did Thriller.
Oh, that guy had a great voice.
Caller number 9 at 602-260-9870. Caller number 9. We didn't have a winner in the 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, or 4 o'clock
$2,000.
$2,000.
Man, that could feed my whale.
On the line. Careful. I don't know if that...
Could feed my orca.
There you go.
We adopted.
Okay. It's just... Yeah, that sounded awkward.
We adopted an orca. I know that.
I know. It could feed my whale. I don't know. It just sounded...
It's a lot of salmon.
Just sounded kind of awkward.
A lot of salmon right there.
Just sounded kind of awkward.
It's
Alan.
Seal.
Alan, you are up. You're ready to go. You got a $2,000 on the line, Alan. Do you understand how this is going to go down?
I do.
Gambo's going to read you a question. You're going to have 24 seconds to answer it. Take the whole 24 seconds if you want, but when it's over, we're going to need an answer.
Immediately.
If you get the answer right, you win $2,000. You good?
Sounds good.
All right, Gambo,
all right,
go for
Alan,
it.
Alan, here is your question. Who has the most 3-pointers made in Phoenix Suns team history? You are on the clock. Who has the most 3-pointers made in Phoenix Suns team history?
I'm going to have to say Quentin Richardson.
This was the easiest one on the board today. I'll give you you don't get the money, but what would your second guess have been?
Probably Steve Nash.
Yeah, you should have. That it's Steve Nash. It's Steve Nash.
Oh.
Quentin Richardson wasn't here long enough.
Yeah, Steve Nash.
Steve Nash was here a long time.
1,051.
You know how many people driving right now want to just shake you? Shake you, Alan.
People driving right now. Why did you even call Alan?
Poor Alan. No. Don't mock Alan. Poor Alan. But Alan, you get the board game. The Burns and Gamble board game. It's very popular with all the ladies and the children, and you get it. But the answer is Steve Nash. Steve Nash had 1,051 three-pointers made. Alan did not get the answer right for $2,000.
Dan Marley was second. Leandro Barbosa was third on that list. Made three-pointers in the history of the Suns.
Where was Quentin Richardson?
I only have one, two, and three. I don't know where Quentin Richardson was on the list. We'll play the game again on Monday, and hopefully we give away some. We went 0 for 4 today. We did not give out any money today at all.
But how many people driving are like, Steve Nash?
Oh, I'm sure.
It's Steve Nash.
Sure, quite a few. Their names continue to be thrown around as possible trade targets. What are the chances that Paul Goldschmidt and Zach Greinke are playing in Arizona next season? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I'm reminded by it because one of our great listeners who came by to say hi to us here at Hayden Chaparral on the Safeway here is a huge Coyotes fan. What was the Coyotes news that you broke earlier today?
Jason Demers out for the season with that knee injury. Devastating knee injury last night for Demers. Real, real tough. Good defenseman for them. They had a great win last night over Nashville, one of the better teams in the NHL. A good hard-fought 2-1 win over Nashville. They were up 2-0 and had to hold on in that third period, gave up a goal. But Darcy Kemper played very, very well for them. They held on. They beat Nashville, got 2 points. But Demers now out for the season with that knee injury.
Bob Nightingale earlier today on the Doug and Wolf show thinks it is highly unlikely Zach Greinke is going to be pitching for the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2019.
I'd be stunned if he is. It really would be. I mean, they're shopping him everywhere. And, it may take a package with with Paul Goldschmidt, just because of the money involved. I'd be very surprised. And they're full intent to have a rebuild here. And you can't rebuild when you have a pitcher making $34.5 million.
The idea of packaging the two of them together, that's interesting. Because Bob's not the first person to have suggested that. It's kind of been out there in the wind a little bit. Various rumor-based websites have kind of suggested perhaps a package deal. That's a very interesting thought from the Diamondbacks' perspective.
To package the two of them. I mean, listen, yeah, I mean, if it works. I mean, if you can make it work, I mean, if there's a team that wants both, St. Louis is the one team that's been mentioned. Oh, they could use Goldie. They could use, Greinke, and they got good prospects. They got really good prospects that they could trade, and they want to compete. I mean, the Cardinals they don't want to sit there and watch the Cubs win, every year. They don't want to sit with them. Milwaukee's a challenger now in that division. St. Louis Cardinals haven't made the playoffs right for a couple of years, so they're not going to take this laying down.
It sounds like, and Nightingale, I mean, a couple things happen on this front. Number one, Jeff Mathis, Zach Greinke's personal catcher. Not that necessarily has everything to do with this, but he signed with the Texas Rangers a 2-year deal that you say is going to be worth more than what he was making here in
Arizona.
That's
what I've heard, yeah. I heard it's a 2-year deal worth more. And I don't know the exact number. I've checked around all over the place. That number's not out. But I did have one of the players on the team told me he heard it was more than what he was making here.
Now, that does not mean by itself that Zach Greinke is gone, but you just kind of look at the bigger picture here and everything that's going on with the Diamondbacks organization. The idea of packaging the two of them, though, part of the big hang-up with Greinke is the contract, and part of the big hang-up from the Diamondbacks' perspective is how much that contract that you're going to eat, something that Bob Nightingale this morning with Doug and Wolf talked about from the Diamondbacks' perspective.
He's got, $34.5 million a year left in that contract for 3 more years. I would think they'd have to pay down at least $10 million a year off that, so $30 million. He's still a very good pitcher, as you know, still had a fine season. He takes the ball every 5 days. So you can still argue he's a $20 million pitcher, but just not a $34 million pitcher.
I just wonder if that's part of the effort by the Diamondbacks to mitigate how much of the money they'd have to eat on Greinke. Rather than eat $10 million a year on Greinke, let's try to eat a little bit less and to sweeten the pot for you to take Greinke off of our hands.
With Goldie?
We'll include Paul Goldschmidt.
So a team's going to take, so let's just figure this out. So a team takes on $105 million on Greinke, and then they take on 15 for Goldie, and then if they want to keep Goldie, they got to pay him at least another $100 million. So you're talking about a team taking on $225 million to have Paul Goldschmidt and Zach Greinke?
If you're going to assume that you keep Paul Goldschmidt, which I understand that makes it very expensive.
For him and not, I think anybody trading for him is going to try to keep him, don't you?
I would think they would try.
I mean, do you think he's a rental player for somebody for a year? I don't see that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it just depends on... like, let's say the Houston Astros, for example, because we've talked about them as a potential destination for Paul Goldschmidt. If they get Goldie for a year and they win another World Series, could I see them being a very smart organization with a very smart front office not really wanting to give Paul Goldschmidt the money that he's probably going to want to make at this stage in his career? Yes, I could see the Astros not wanting to give him that money, but saying, we won a World Series with you, therefore it was worth it. I don't think it's an automatic that the team that trades for Goldie is going to necessarily want to try to keep him.
Astros have a 35-year-old first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
35 years old. And also, the American League is just so much different than the National League because of the DH.
I get that. But do the Astros strike you as the organization that would overpay for a 32-year-old player who's... You're not getting the prime of his career when you sign him to this contract. I think the Astros are too smart for that.
Maybe. You might be right.
I really do. I don't think they
will.
Well,
listen, you got to see what the market is. What if Goldie goes out there next year and, bats 275 with 28 homers and 85 RBIs? Maybe his value, people start to say, okay, last 2 years,
maybe
numbers have come down a little bit, so your value comes down. Maybe Goldschmidt's not, like, we're thinking, Goldschmidt from the past, oh, he's going to get a 5-year deal. It's going to be worth $20 million a year. Maybe that value's not there. Maybe it's not. Maybe after next year, his value is a 3-year deal for $70 million. Or, I mean, we just don't know what his. It's, and I've asked people this: what's Paul Goldschmidt's value? Got to wait till after next year. That's what everybody keeps telling me. You got to wait because he's starting to get on that. Past that. He's going to be next year. He's going to be 32. So a lot of people think your baseball prime is 27 to 32. That's your 5-year baseball prime is 27 to 32. Players play well now past 32, but a lot of your prime years, his prime years are probably going to be over.
His prime years are gone.
So his value is very difficult to gauge, and everybody I've asked, what's he going to be worth after next year? Wait till after next year, and I'll tell you.
I think if this were baseball 7 years ago, we could gauge how much he's going to be worth in the offseason. But because the game now is populated by, as Tim Kirchin likes to say, these young, smart general managers around baseball, I don't know if a lot of them are going to be inclined to give a 32-year-old player that much money. I really don't. I mean, what was it that Nightingale said today? That Goldie probably left $120 million on the table when he signed the contract with the Diamondbacks?
And never complained about it. Never demanded a trade. Never demanded a new contract. Unbelievable. I mean, it really is unbelievable that he never at any point demanded a new contract or have his contract torn up. And listen, I think the Diamondbacks did the right thing by not extending him. I really do. I think they did the right thing by not. It was all that talk about extending him. Remember?
Oh, I do.
All the Diamondbacks, and they didn't do it. And I think they did the right thing.
Nightingale's not the only one. John Paul Morosi, who's baseball writer for MLB.com, wrote this morning, quote, "The D-backs consistently are described as one of the most active sellers on the trade market in the early stages of the offseason." Shouldn't surprise anybody.
No, I think. Listen, Mathis is gone. It's a good chance Descalso is going to be gone. Chris Owings could be gone. Shelby Miller is going to be gone. I mean, Ahmed Peralta. I mean, Robbie Ray. I mean, there's no guarantees. I mean, they are. I can't imagine them trading off the whole team. I mean, I really can't.
No.
But there's going to be, when we go to spring training next year, that's going to be a completely different looking roster.
It will. And if it's no Greinke, no Goldie, and obviously no AJ and no Patrick.
No Boxberger.
You start to wonder, like, who are the guys that they market this team around? And not that that's all that matters, but who's on the billboards, right? Who's on the pocket schedules? Who's on the...
Baxter?
Peralta?
Yeah, Peralta. Ray,
Archie.
I mean, the only thing with Archie is he just struggled so much last year. I think Peralta. I think you try to take some of the pressure off of Archie. You try not to put that on him next year. Just concentrate on baseball.
Fair.
I think you make Peralta the guy.
It's going to be a crazy offseason for the Diamondbacks. And with all the speculation around baseball that they're aggressively shopping Greinke the way they are, it's a lot to talk about. We're out of here. I want to thank everybody here at Safeway and Coppola Wines for having us. We're back on Monday at 2 o'clock. You're on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.